Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Monday, September 20th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Amelia Newcomb.
And I'm Clay Collins.
Until recently, if visitors walked the Walnut Street Bridge in Chattanooga, Tennessee, they likely would be unaware of its troubled history. But yesterday, that changed. In a way, many hope will promote reconciliation. On March 19, 1906, a murderous crowd surged to the bridge where they lynched Ed Johnson. The young black man had been accused of raping a white woman and was sentenced to death after a flagrantly biased trial. When he was granted a stay of execution by the U.S. Supreme Court, white residents turned to mob violence. On September 19, 2021, a very different crowd gathered on the bridge. In a spirit of writing history, the diverse group of hundreds walked across the Tennessee River. Then, amid song and the spoken word, including a formal apology from Mayor Tim Kelly, they witnessed the unveiling of the Ed Johnson Memorial, the result of years of work to bring the case to light and heal a city. Now, the bridge's full story of violence and bravery, of inhumanity as well as courage and deep spiritual faith, is there for all to learn from. The Johnson case left a powerful mark. The appeal to the Supreme Court was one of the first by a black attorney. The court's order of a federal review of Johnson's conviction was unusual for a tribunal that long ignored unconstitutional procedures in the South. After the lynching, the Supreme Court conducted its only criminal trial in history, resulting in several convictions. Justice Thurgood Marshall would later say it was the first time black people saw the court act on their behalf. Remembrance, reconciliation, healing is the spirit underlying the memorial. Eddie Glaude Jr., professor of African American Studies at Princeton University, said Sunday that to create a better America, we gotta tell the truth. That opens the door to progress. As Eric Atkins, vice chairman of the Ed Johnson Project, put it, when hearts and minds are intermingled, you can achieve things you thought were impossible. Now, today's stories. Our first story. Angela Merkel, who is stepping down as Chancellor of Germany, exuded a quiet assuredness and willingness to embrace change that made her a force on the global stage. That legacy, some say, was rooted in her upbringing in East Germany.
Steady and resolute. Thinking back, that's how teachers described the studious pupil from the German Democratic Republic. The description held when, as a middle schooler, she started winning academic Olympiads. Decades later, those same qualities carried Angela Merkel to the pinnacle of German government, where she led the now united Federal Republic of Germany for nearly two decades. In an era of disorder and crises, Chancellor Merkel was pragmatic and methodical, a position that won her both admirers and detractors. Martin Gross, a political scientist, puts it this way: you either admire the stability over her 16 years or criticize her lack of vision. In 2015 came the decision that's sure to be the most indelible part of her legacy. Ms. Merkel opened Germany's doors to an influx of more than a million refugees, mostly from Syria and Afghanistan. The decision might have helped enable the rise of Germany's far right. At the same time, supporters argue anti-immigrant populism was a global phenomenon. Some domestic priorities, like education and infrastructure, seem to have been left behind, critics note. History may judge Ms. Merkel more harshly than the mostly complimentary assessment she gets today, or maybe not. As one veteran German political reporter predicts, the nostalgia for her will start within 2 years after her leaving office. This story was reported by Lenora Chu in Berlin and Templin, Germany, for The Monitor.
Virtually no religious denominations officially object to the COVID-19 vaccines, but more people are seeking faith-based exemptions. Employers now must decide how and whether to weigh the merits of their case.
While large businesses generally favor President Joe Biden's vaccine mandates as offering clarity, they now find themselves in the position of having to decide what sincerely religious means as the number of requests for exemptions based on faith rises. As the Delta variant created a surge in caseload this summer, overwhelming a number of hospitals in states with lower rates of vaccination, many employers have felt caught between two legally fraught obligations: providing a safe workplace while at the same time evaluating employees' requests to opt out of getting a vaccine for religious reasons. Officially, most religious groups have supported vaccines, and the Pope and a number of prominent evangelicals have urged their followers to get the vaccine. But America's civil rights traditions specifically focus on the religious beliefs of an individual. For businesses, questioning the sincerity of an employee's religious belief is both legally and practically fraught, employment experts say. Jamie Prenkert, professor of business law at Indiana University's Kelly School of Business, says this is an area where the distinction between a religious and ethical objection and a political and policy objection will get really fuzzy really quickly, and that's going to put employers in a very difficult position. This story was reported by Harry Bruinius in New York for The Monitor.
Is it really possible to reset the relationship between tenants and landlords? Virginia's progress on longstanding housing issues might serve as a model for the nation.
3 years after Virginia made national news for having one of the highest eviction rates in the country, the state has responded with an array of new protections for tenants. And to date, Virginia has distributed the nation's highest share of pandemic rent relief money allocated by Congress. With proper checks and balances, eviction is an important shield, protecting landlords from careless tenants. But that shield can too easily become a sword, says Eliza Durana from Princeton's Eviction Lab. The challenge for lawmakers is writing policy that protects both parties, she adds. Rent relief can play a part in that. For Cedric Simmons, who received an eviction notice last month, Virginia's rent relief program was a game changer. A gig worker with childcare costs and car repair bills, he'd fallen behind on his rent, but he qualified for state aid that allowed him to stay in his home. Now he's studying for an exam that could help him land a more stable job in information technology, and he's saving money. Those people who helped me apply for rent relief are my angels, says Mr. Simmons. They will never be forgotten for the rest of my life. This story was reported by Noah Robertson in Alexandria, Virginia, for The Monitor.
Firefighters have battled tirelessly to save one of California's sequoia groves and its famous General Sherman tree. These efforts underscore the tree's magnificence and a resilience challenged by changing climate conditions.
Like so many others, The Monitor's Francine Kiefer was concerned when she learned that the KNP complex fire in California's Sierra Nevada mountains was dangerously close to the giant forest in Sequoia National Park. That's where the famous and ginormous General Sherman tree has stood for thousands of years. Then she says she began learning about all the firefighters are doing to save the sequoias, and her initial "oh no" turned into an "oh my." Crews have raked the forest floor, burned duff from around the base of individual trees, and wrapped the General Sherman and other named trees in foil reaching 10 to 15 feet high. It's the same material that firefighters carry to protect themselves in case of a burnover. Sequoias are used to fire, said John Wallace, the fire's operations section chief, at a briefing Friday evening, but we're taking extra steps to really try to protect these trees, he added. That's especially true of the General Sherman. At 275 feet high and more than 36 feet in diameter at the base, it's the largest tree by volume on the planet. We'll save the Sherman before anything else, Fire Information Officer Mark Garrett says. For now, it seems, they have. This essay was written by Francine Kiefer in Pasadena, California, for The Monitor.
In our progress roundup, citizen activism carries risks, as some Indonesian villagers found when they were jailed for speaking up. But it also yields rewards, and just a few voices can make a big impact. You can find the full roundup of this week's Points of Progress by Lindsay McGinnis in today's issue. Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on a revival of public art as freedom from a pandemic. For the German dramatist Bertolt Brecht, art was not a mirror of reality, but a hammer with which to shape it. That idea may explain why so many cities are supporting artworks in public spaces during the pandemic. The art is safe to view and can lighten people's spirits. It also helps restore a community's social fabric. The latest example comes from Italy. Over the weekend, residents along Venice's Grand Canal were entertained by a wooden boat in the shape of a giant violin. On the deck was a string quartet playing the works of Vivaldi. Both the performance and the violin boat were a tribute to those lost to COVID-19 and a symbol of rebirth. Then there is Paris. Although not originally designed during the pandemic, an ephemeral installation by the late artist Christo has drawn huge crowds since its opening September 18th. Before his death in May last year, Christo had arranged a wrapping of France's most important monument, the 164-foot-high Arc de Triomphe. As the pandemic recedes, many cities are again finding the liberating power of public culture. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. And thanks for starting your week with us. Tomorrow, Noah Robertson will report from Racine, Wisconsin, where, in a bid to build trust between police and community, the city bought homes in at-risk neighborhoods and asked officers to live in them. It's the next installment in our Policing in America series. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how a higher understanding of wilderness helped her find joy and light following the loss of her mother and stepfather. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Alyssa Britton and Erica Page.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.